the Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio, the smarter way to make radio.
Hello, I'm Stuart Clarkson. Coming up this week, we'll talk radio tech with Dan McQuillan from Broadcast Bionics. How has radio adapted and used technology to its advantage during the last few strange months? And what's the future of the radio studio? Plus, in David Lloyd's Radio Moments, a local commercial radio legend debuts on the air. ILR comes together for a pivotal moment in its lifetime. There are memories of Music While You Work, and you'll also hear a great archive clip of the fabulous Ray Moore.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Macassio.
First Radio Today's Roy Martin is here, and things are starting to all get back to normal, and certainly in the next couple of weeks, we might even be able to go to the pub, Roy.
This is true. Good old Boris. and it's quite a good new norm, because one thing I hated when going out... Hi, Stu. How are you, by the way?
Better this week. Thank you. Having a better week.
Thank you. Thank you for everybody who got in touch. But we'll talk about that in a second. But in answer to your question, the one thing I hated about pubs was standing at the bar for half an hour, getting ignored and people pushing in front of you. And it looks like that is going to be a thing of the past, which that alone is something to celebrate, right?
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to just going in, sitting at a table and ordering a drink from my app on my phone and then it just turning up. It's like every pub's going to turn into Wetherspoons in a good way.
It is Wetherspoons and McDonald's. And somebody tweeted the other day, it was a radio person saying, so the Wetherspoons app is going to be ready before the Test and Trace app is going to be ready. Looks like it is. What a world.
Yes, yeah. Gone are the days of standing at a bar with your £20 note, waving it, trying to get somebody's attention.
You just turn up, get a seat, and waiter service is alive and well. Let's hope so, anyway.
Fantastic. Well, I'm looking forward to maybe seeing you at some point before the end of the year for a drink in a pub. Do you think we can make that happen?
I think we deserve one. I think we all deserve one. Large Diet Coke, please.
Yeah, and as Roy mentioned, thanks to everyone who got in touch after last week's podcast. Quite a few people sent us a message, either jointly or separately, to just catch up and check in. We really appreciate that. It's good to know mainly that you're listening and you're actually hearing this rubbish that we're recording in our own homes during the lockdown. And it's good to know you're thinking of us as well. So thanks to those who did offer some wise words or some advice on getting away from everything or whatever.
Yeah, we really do appreciate it. And we just sit here, like you said, talking rubbish once a week. I mean, I listen back to the podcast, but I skip this bit because this is rubbish. I go straight to your interview. So thank you for listening to this bit. We do appreciate it. It makes it all worthwhile, even though it is 3 a.m. right now and we should be in bed. We should do this during the day, you know. We should.
Yeah, well, really should. There'd be children screaming and all sorts, wouldn't there? You know, throwing things at each other. Let's get on with some radio stuff then, shall we? KISS breakfast changes. A little bit of diversity coming to the mornings in KISS.
Quite literally. I didn't see this coming. Tom Green and Daisy Maskell are leaving after just 18 months. I thought they were settling in nicely, but you never know reasons, do you? People have their own reasons. So new breakfast hosts will be Jordan and Perry from Diversity, like you say. And looking forward to that. It should be a bit of a change. Should be good.
The reaction's been good online to it as well, seemingly, to some of the social media posts that KISS have put out there and that Jordan and Perry have put out there. So it seems they will do well with listeners. Popular names that people know. They've got a bit of experience now presenting because they've been on KISS for a little while on the weekend schedule as well.
Yeah, good luck to them.
So another breakfast change as well at XS Manchester. Obviously, Adam Brown left a few weeks ago to go to Radio X. But it seems like in hiring a new breakfast presenter, that plan to turn it into Capital Extra has completely gone out the window now. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, they did say that the day they got refusal from Ofcom to not turn it into Capital Extra. They said, oh, OK, fair enough. We'll invest in the station and keep hold of it. And the latest radio, of course, was really good for them. And Alex James is a good, solid jock. I mean, I had him down as he's always been a hit music presenter. So going over to a rock format, be a nice change for him, I'm sure. So, yeah, looking forward to that as well. Good luck, Alex.
Well done. Yeah, good luck to Alex James. Some news from Nation Radio this week, Nation Broadcasting, about small-scale DAB multiplexes. Now, we know Ofcom's going to start advertising these in September, which will come round sooner than you think. And Nation says any it applies for and wins, or that it's involved with, it's going to give away some free space to community radio. Seems like a good thing to put on the applications to convince Ofcom that they're a worthy runner of multiplexes.
Yeah, and I think there's going to be more applications than we think. I mean, just near where I live, there's a major city, which is one of the places losing its local radio station to Greatest Hits Radio, and there's going to be a multiplex in that area. And I know of probably two or three, you know, totally unconnected people or organisations that are going to be applying for that. So all these small-scale multiplexes, they're going to be in demand. They're going to be good. And to get something like that on your application saying we will give a free slot to any community radio station that wants it, well, you know, if you were Ofcom, the only trouble is that they could set the standard. And, you know, if me or you end up owning a multiplex, people will expect a free slot for community radio. So will that be the way the industry goes, or is this just Nation trying to get one up on everybody else? Interesting times.
Yeah, and you've got to think about the viability of some of them as well, because particularly in some of the smaller areas, some of these multiplexes are going to cover quite small and in some cases less populated areas. You know, is it viable to be giving away a load of free space if you haven't got enough commercial operators to pay for the other space and make the whole thing viable? So as a business opportunity, you know, you'd think some of those operators might go, well, we can't afford to give away free space.
Yeah, but it's with multiplexes, you've got, it doesn't actually cost them to put another station on. It costs them by not getting revenue. But if they've got five paying customers and there's 15 free slots, it doesn't actually cost them any money to put another one on. So maybe that's where they're going with that. And one question I asked them, and they don't know the answer to at this stage, is if I apply to Ofcom for a CDSP license, which is the new community radio license for multiplexes instead of FM, would I still get a free slot? Because if the answer is yes, I could pay my, 250 quid to Ofcom for a CDSP license, and then go to Nation and say, thank you very much, where's my free slot? And there's your radio station for 250 quid. Bargain.
Yeah, but then you've got to run that radio station as a not-for-profit, haven't you? Rather than as a commercial station, which if you're starting up a digital-only station, you could run it as a commercial station.
This is true, yeah, but I'm just looking at all options there. So, yeah, who knows? It's a good angle, though.
Yeah, a good blog from David Lloyd this week about local radio and the future of local radio. A lot of mentions of BBC local radio in that and how it could adapt and change after the pandemic. One thing that we know is that it seems these temporary schedules that they've had in place for a good few months now are here to stay, at least for, well, till the end of the year.
Yeah, and it's apparently well known within the BBC local radio that it's going to be around April next year where they're going to stay in place too. And they'll never admit this, but I'm pretty sure that they are using coronavirus as an excuse, a piggy bank to actually make the changes they probably already wanted to make in a way. You know, cutting costs, lengthening programmes, less people on air, not as many short programmes, not as many double headers, all that kind of thing to try and slim down the network, you know. They're doing it now, so who says they won't continue?
And of course, that means, you know, there are freelancers who thought they might be returning to a show soon that might now not be returning for a long time or ever. And I think there are even some staff presenters who are not on air at the moment who are at home during the week or perhaps just doing a weekend slot for a couple of shows rather than doing 5 days a week. So, you know, how it affects those people financially is obviously quite concerning as well.
Yeah, it's not good. There are cuts in commercial radio. There's going to be cuts at the BBC. We know that. They announced anybody who wants to take redundancy can take it. So it's just this virus is affecting us all in every possible way. And we just need to come out alive on the other side. That's the main thing.
Yeah. And the BBC, you did a story this week on Radio Today about this Make a Difference campaign, which is the BBC local radio kind of coronavirus contact that it's having and help it's providing. People it's putting in touch with other listeners and organisations and stuff like that. And they're saying they've had 1 million contacts through Make a Difference. But there's a bit of an issue with the figures here, because we don't know whether this is actually just people ringing up saying, I can help somebody, or I want to volunteer to help, or can somebody help me? But actually, it's all contact that BBC Local Radio has had. So it could be somebody ringing in to tell them about a traffic problem, or somebody ringing in to complain about something they'd heard, even.
Yeah, and I think in the conversations I've had, they're acknowledging that now, that the million contacts is basically every contact with the radio station. But they're assuming that anybody who's contacting a BBC Local radio station during the lockdown is looking for help, I guess. So, yeah, but not, of course, unless they're making a complaint, like you say.
And
yeah.
A million contacts over 13 weeks, split between 39 radio stations, divided by 24, I think it works out about 12 contacts per station per hour. So it doesn't seem like a lot when you split it right down. A million is a good big figure.
And that's not just 12 phone calls, is it? That's emails, texts, carrier pigeons.
Telegrams, yeah, all of that stuff.
Telegrams, yeah. I mean, if you think people don't contact them overnight, so you've got a little bit of leeway there. But yeah, I see what you're saying.
Something that's happening in the next week before we will talk again is the launch of Times Radio, which launches on Monday, the 29th of June. Just as we've been talking, I've been downloading the new Times Radio app, which is here already. It's got the schedule listed on there. So the first programme at 6 a.m. on Monday is going to be Asma Mir and Stig Abel. And their special guest, it appears, is John Witherow, who's the editor of The Times. I don't know how many managed to get him.
What a scoop.
I know. And then it looks like Matt Chorley will be on at 10 with two former chancellors, George Osborne and Alistair Darling. The rest of the first day, Mariella Frostrop at 1, John Pienaar at 4, Phil Williams at 7, and Carol Walker rounding the day off from 10 o'clock. So they've got an app there. There's a play button on it, which I think he's doing a test stream at the moment. If I put that on, there you go.
Reviews and interesting guests. So join me. The new national speech station is almost here.
This is Michael Portillo.
There we go. So that's Times Radio that's launching before we speak again next week, and hopefully we'll have some guests from Times to talk about the launch and how it went on next week's podcast.
Just listening to the loop that's going around at the moment, I mean, as an audio producer, that it sounds really good. The imaging sounds good. The voiceover sounds familiar. I don't know who he is, but I think he sounds really good, very appropriate for the brand, and the music is good. And obviously they've spent a lot of money on the right voices for the station, as in the presenters. So they all sound, you know, experienced, mature presenters. So the tests sound good. Looking forward to checking it out when it launches.
And something else which is coming soon, we haven't got an exact date yet, but we think it might be either Monday the 31st of August, the bank holiday Monday, or Tuesday the 1st of September, a new month and all that, is Greatest Hits Radio, which is going to be taking over lots of heritage local brands and some less heritage local brands around the country. Some stations have now started taking shows hosted by Greatest Hits Radio presenters. Some stations, I've noticed this week as well, have started dropping current tracks from their output, so they're not playing A-list and B-list stuff. They're just kind of going with the oldest format already, or dropping it down to one current song per hour to ease the listeners towards that Greatest Hits format.
Interesting, yeah. And there are so many campaigns doing the rounds. Literally thousands and thousands of people have signed online petitions to save the clock tower, to save the local radio stations. And it's all well and good, and it shows the passion is there for local radio. And some of these stations that are going have, you know, 50% reach, but it means diddly squat to anybody, unfortunately. And Bauer's going to plough on with the plan to roll out Greatest Hits. So it is a shame, but it is the future. But it does mean, though, once these local radio stations with all the local content disappears, it just opens the floodgates for somebody to come along and set up a local radio station, like in Salisbury, for example, in near where I live. There's probably going to be a local station pop up there when Spire FM disappears. So lots of opportunities on the DAB, I would say.
Yeah, not only with small-scale DAB, but online as well. I think I would urge you, if you haven't read it, to read David Lloyd's blog that he's done this week about local radio and the future of local radio, just to kind of pull a couple of bits out of that for you to highlight some of the things that he says. He says, if there's virtue in a local service, you must set out your stall to stay local and deliver on it with every trick in the book. Given it's an expensive business, the job can be done in part perfectly and more economically with voice tracking these days. Local does not have to be live. Radio used to be routinely live because there was simply no other way. So a lot of these new stations that are going to appear on DAB or as online stations, they don't need buildings, they don't need big mixing desks, they don't need live presenters. A lot of things can be done remotely these days, and I think, you know, the future of local radio is content gathering put together and turned into a radio station, but not a traditional radio station as we might have known it in the past.
Yeah, and he says if we're setting up the network of BBC local radio these days, he would have less staff. He would probably put out five live during the day with local opt-outs and all that. It's a really good, interesting piece and worth the 9 minutes read time that it suggests at the top. Definitely worth a read.
Right. We will talk to you next week, and we'll hear about Times Radio as well next week, Roy. Have a good week in radio or out of radio or in kindergarten or whatever you're doing in your life at the moment.
I tell you what, things are looking up. Not only are the pubs coming back and McDonald's is already open, but my youngest goes to nursery next week. I mean, it's only part-time, but, you know, a few hours a day, doing a bit of work, that's all we can ask for.
And just want to end this section of the podcast with something you might have seen some posts about on social media over the weekend. And this was about sexual abuse in the radio industry. It got a lot of reaction on Twitter in particular. Some quite horrific stories shared about experiences that people have had. And we know this goes on in all industries, not just ours. But it's been highlighted where some people have been taken advantage of for being keen to get into radio or for wanting to advance their career. And Roy and I just wanted to say that it's not okay and it never has been okay. So if you're listening to this and you're one of those people who in the past has behaved inappropriately towards somebody else in our industry, perhaps you still do that, please just know that it's absolutely not okay. And it's not just women experiencing this treatment either. There are men targeting and grooming younger men in radio. I've heard stories, for example, in the past of programmers asking young male presenters for topless pictures as part of a process to get a job on the air, on the radio. Again, it's not okay. And as one tweet that you might have seen put it, bosses, that pile of CVs on your desk isn't for dating purposes. LinkedIn is not Tinder.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics, creators of the Bionic Studio. Listening, watching, reacting to and learning from every spoken word, caller, tweet and SMS to unmix, unlock and understand your content. The Bionic Studio transforms everything about radio except the way you make it.
This week on the Radio Today programme, we're doing another focus on radio tech and how technology has been helping during the last few months in the coronavirus lockdown. Dan McQuillan is with us, Managing Director of Broadcast Bionics. Hi, Dan, how are you?
I'm pretty good, yes. You know, like everybody else, sheltering safely at home and getting used to... we're very, very fortunate, actually. You know, as a tech company with software, we're able to quite safely and easily transition to staff working, you know, safely and comfortably and actually pretty effectively from home. So for us, this has been a relatively comfortable transition. What's been interesting, I guess, is helping our broadcast friends who've had the much heavier lift.
Yeah, and I guess a very busy time because, as you say, a lot of demand on technology at the moment. So people have been wanting some support or pointers as to, can I do this with it? Can I do that with it, etc.?
Yes, and we've been at the forefront over the last few years of trying to evangelize some of these ideas of virtualization, of moving from hardware to software, of the kind of flexibility of IP infrastructure. It was a different year for us as a manufacturer. We didn't go to NAB. We didn't have, you know, the sort of typical Las Vegas show where everyone goes and talks about changing stuff in the future. Instead, we all stayed at home and just changed stuff. And in 5 weeks, I think we changed more than 5 years of going to NAB or IBC. And I think a lot of the stuff that was previously seen perhaps as curiosity or novelty or technology for the sake of it has proved pretty critical to providing that flexibility or agility for broadcasters to be able to rapidly change their workflows and the way that they get content from studio to air, or even bypass the studio and get content from talent working from home. And yeah, we are not the heroes in this piece. We're just tool makers who had stuff. And so we jettisoned the whole plan of NAB very quickly, reoriented all of our roadmaps and tech. And March was just very, very busy giving out licenses, changing the way that products were architected to allow people to quickly, stretch and use things in new and different ways. So March was pretty crazy, mostly for our customers and a little bit for us. April was quite busy, and then May was slightly quieter. And then suddenly, back end of May into June, stations have popped up, kind of doing stuff again. I'm seeing a little bit more confidence returning. We're kind of come out of the kind of hunkered down and going, well, we can't just do nothing now. We got back on air. Things are working pretty well. What are we going to do next? Yeah, so March was crazy. Probably March, April was crazy. May was a little bit quieter, but yeah, back end now of May into June, and it's, people are now thinking of new ways of moving forward with more confidence and clarity, I think.
Most people listening to this podcast will know all about Bionics because you very kindly are our podcast sponsors and we have adverts promoting all your stuff. But you do hardware and software, lots of products covering phone systems and playouts to visualization, guest contributions. And I guess a lot of that already had the functionality to work remotely and work quite smartly for people anyway.
Yeah, probably the intent wasn't that we would work at this level. I don't think any of us foresaw the idea that we would have to change this radically and this quickly. But the agility that's there with using WebRTC as we are today, so we have a product anywhere that lets you bring audio, as the name implies, from anywhere quickly and easily. But our shtick is doing that with information and control, of understanding that radio typically now is more than just getting a voice to a transmitter. There's information about social media, callers, the songs that you're playing, chat and production information that needs to move around. So trying to make sure that we could remote the full studio experience to the talent, the full creative experience and control for their program making, and deliver the fully engaging and rich experience to listeners and viewers at the other end. So, yeah, we wanted to make sure that we could use tools that we might have used to extend around buildings or to OBs and make all of that available so that people could screen, the producer could screen from his spare bedroom, the talent could see that information in their home studio, and every piece of metadata, information and control gets to where it needs to be.
Yeah, because I guess it isn't just about the information and the content getting to the listener, it's it coming the other way as well, because where in the past stations might have had multiple different systems and different logins, if they're using your products, it kind of pulls everything together, so they get the incoming as well as the outgoing all in one box, if you like.
Yeah, and the problem with boxes is they've historically then ended up stranded in the wrong building. So by moving to virtual boxes, radio a long time ago moved from analog boxes to digital boxes, and then we've moved from digital boxes to computers, but still computers that are stuck in the wrong building with the wrong login and the wrong security. So yeah, moving to virtualization has allowed customers to spin up new capacity to, WNYC in New York, they didn't have the right version of our system. They couldn't get into various bits of their building or were limited on staff. So they would remotely just spin up a new virtual machine, spin up a server, install a sandbox version of a new system and get moving on that. So it's been the reapplication of technology, which I hope will not forever see us all broadcasting from our homes. I have had broadcasters say to me, that's it, we're closing our studios. We're going to work like this forever. I think that's a bit of an overreaction. I think studios provide a lot, and certainly the sort of having a home studio is of great comfort during times like this, and it may fit. I think some of the stuff we did perhaps temporarily, we will learn that creatively there are options that will be there as options rather than enforced in the future to give us creative freedom. But I think we will still have studios and main sort of facilities, but the way that they position the equipment in servers and virtual rather than physical devices in physical studio spaces will have accelerated an inevitable change by the experience we've had of saying, okay, we were forced to try this and some of it didn't suck. A lot of it was seat of the pants. A lot of it isn't I'm sure the way that many of the engineers would choose to architect it if we'd had a bit more notice. And so our whole roadmap of how we deliver some of the stuff that we were planning has changed to prioritize the things that, that people will now be demanding that we move to fully hosted and virtual and online and remote capable. There's a few products I wish we'd had, you know, things that are coming in the next 3 months that would have been great if we'd said, here it is in March.
Yeah.
But those things have been accelerated and the way we communicate them may be a little bit different.
That's interesting. And I guess with a lot of tech, and I'm probably guilty of this as well in radio stations where I've worked, you kind of use a product, whether it's software or hardware or whatever, and then suddenly somebody says, oh, did you know you could do that with it as well? So there are probably functions in a lot of radio stations that was already there that people weren't utilizing. So you've enabled them and showed them that, oh, actually, yeah, you've asked if it can do this. It's been able to do that for years, and here's how you do it.
Yeah, so we've stretched some of that functionality to a point of skullduggery, I think. You know, there are definitely features which have been abused. But, you know, just as the creative freedoms will have, I hope, informed and inspired new ways of engaging different talent who may not want to or be accessible into our traditional studio locations, I do believe that we have, through the painful process of change, experimented and stretched things and realized that certain things are possible and perhaps even desirable. I've been saying on podcasts and things in the US that I am arguing against the notion that necessity is the mother of invention, because necessity is the midwife of invention. All the things we just did were actually previously already available. What necessity did was it facilitated a process of painful change. You know, so it was the midwife of saying all of this stuff was possible. You could have worked from home. You might not have chosen to. The technology was there, but by being forced to do various things, that process of change has taken technology, which is already available, accelerated the development of it, accelerated the integration of it, the acceptability culturally and otherwise of using glass consoles instead of physical consoles, using home setups rather than really big main studio setups, using WebRTC rather than expensive fixed IP links, has all just given us new change, new challenge, new confidence, new clarity about how we might architect our studios and arrange our creative process as we move back to the new normal. And there will be a new normal. It will not be the same as February or March. It will not be as radically different as I think many are perhaps implying. But I hope we will have learned a lot. And I hope we don't just fall back into our old habits, because then we will have missed the opportunity of all this. I wish we'd gone to Vegas instead of doing this. You know, we'd have changed less. We'd have, you know, socialized more. But we had to do this. And so let's seize the opportunity from you know, enforcing that change. Let's learn and grow from that so that we don't just find ourselves next year back in Vegas talking about, God, do you remember when we did all that? God, you know, and actually find we're still doing all the same stuff.
Yeah, and obviously you work across lots of different markets. The UK is just one of them, although obviously you're a UK company. How do you think different parts of the world have done things differently during the pandemic? Has everybody kind of gone, let's all get on with it and broadcast from home and get on and do this? Or have different countries dealt with the challenges in different ways?
So I am blessed and fortunate that because we're based from the UK, I think is why I get the ability and the privilege of working in 100 different countries, not because I'm great, but because having worked in the UK industry, which has this phenomenal reputation for being at the forefront of technical change, you know, I'm going to give a big hat tip to the UK radio industry. I think we came through this. You know, people are very critical of the UK's responsible in general. I shall not make a political point on your podcast, but I will say that the one place that people cannot criticize the UK response would be around radio and our media response, which I think has been really exemplary, and we've all stayed on the air. There are other countries which notably have done well, Australia and other stations and countries who have a very similar, probably slightly forward-thinking, agile, you know, have early adopted technology and are perhaps looked on by, for example, our American cousins with some curiosity and some suspicion, who don't perhaps have that same mindset and have struggled. Many larger broadcasters in the US have done extremely well. Many of the smaller ones have struggled because they haven't had that agility baked into the platforms they were using. So I think we will see many countries which were slower in really not just adopting, because most have adopted, but embracing the flexibility of IP and virtual and WebRTC and all of the various bits and pieces. Yeah, so let's give, you know, let's raise a glass to not to us, because we get to sit at home and just write code, but to those who worked long hours under the most remarkable and unforeseeable of circumstances to keep UK radio spinning and to do it to a really, really high standard.
And you mentioned earlier the importance of the studio and that there will be some people who go, well, we don't need a studio anymore. If I was starting a new radio station, there's going to be lots of small-scale DAB multiplexes popping up around the UK, for example, and kind of small local radio stations that might want to appear on those to replace some of the stations that are turning into bigger brands. Do people need to be building a radio station studio with a mixer and all that kind of stuff, or is cloud-based for a low-cost small station the way forward?
Yeah, I would like to give you one answer and then sell you one product, but the answer is that there will be marquee, what I call monolithic studios for sure, and we're working with the BBC on what their internet-fit radio studios might look like. You know, and so they will be the flagship marquee studios for your, you know, premium kind of breakfast content for big networked stations. And those will be exceptional, and they'll have visualization, they'll have advanced systems, they'll be really engaging and you know, not traditional, but will be flagship studios. I think there's an interesting space underneath, and Bauer are leading the way in terms of little glass studios and pop-up studios, you know, which are much more flexible. So there will be big flagship marquee studios, there will be cut down studios. We're also working with the Beeb on what they call digital tables, what we call bionic tables, which are, you know, what does a studio look like that isn't a studio, that is for on demand, is for podcast? And so creating, you know, digital table spaces or bionic table spaces within facilities that are sub a studio, but might be all of your meeting rooms might be bionic tables. The corner of each office might have a bionic table, you know, 4 microphones, 4 headphones. Bring your own device, connect up to that, and get studio-like facilities plumbed into the rest of the infrastructure of a studio complex, but it isn't a studio. And I think we'll see a huge growth in those additional flexible spaces within what will be our studio complexes. And then absolutely at home, we will see people connecting remotely into tables and studios and contributing from home. And we'll see people increasingly producing on-demand content, in particular podcasts, etc., using stuff which is either in-home or fully hosted. One of our big projects that's been delayed a little bit by COVID is re-architecting our whole back end to increasingly allow all of our platform to be fully hosted. I imagine that will be hosted within the facility, private cloud perhaps, but you know, within 2 years for sure, you'll be able to just rent all of our services from the cloud. And you know, not just for a home studio, but I imagine a time when the BBC, listen, they don't want servers. You know, they've already running out of space even in their beautiful flagship buildings. So they would much rather that all be managed, you know, the power, the air conditioning, the ability to scale up and scale down for an election or the Olympics is going to be much, much better as we do that. There are challenges around latency, there are challenges around uptime, and there are challenges historically around cultural acceptability. And I think the main thing that changed during COVID was it's become more acceptable to talk about doing this. It's become more inevitable because management will demand that agility and that flexibility to scale up and down. And the experience we've had, some good, some bad, will inform and enrich our ability to move forward with confidence.
And you mentioned some of those new products that you're working on. Is there anything you can give us a sneak peek of, or is it all top secret at the moment?
Oh, I'm wildly indiscreet. there were things we were going to show in Vegas. So we were going to show we have a whole line of products that sit underneath Bionic Studio. So Bionic Studio, formerly known as Phonebox and the products that sit around that, has been very successful to us, and we have most of the world's major broadcasters. But there's a lot of people for whom we haven't been able to bring some of those facilities. So we have a new range of One products, so Camera One and Caller One, which democratize that down to the sort of student community and you know, hospital broadcasting kind of world, as well as just smaller facilities who want to do camera switching or who want to do talk show products. And then there's the Bionic Table idea, which is a concept at the moment that we're working with the BBC in the UK and Southern Cross Austereo in Australia on bringing to you know, a few tables as prototypes, you know, as we get towards the end of the summer. And I think that'll be a full product by the end of the year. And that will be how do we deliver all of the capabilities of one of these flagship marquee monolithic traditional studios, but into the, not my mother podcasting or you and I, Stuart, doing this podcast, but newspapers, magazines, TV stations, you know, radio stations that need to radically increase the variety and the scope of their output. So, leveraging a lot of the skills and infrastructure, which typically has involved hundreds of thousands or tens of thousands of pounds, into studios that cost a fraction of that. And can pop up flexibly anywhere. 4 microphones, 4 headphones, bring your own laptop, and deliver everything. Play out, talk show systems, remote contribution, accessing IP audio feeds, multi-track recording, but do it all from a table, 4 microphones, 4 headphones.
Wow, that sounds fascinating. And lots of details about everything we've been talking about as well, and all your products at bionics.co.uk. Thank you for coming on, Dan. It's really good to catch up with you.
Excellent. Thanks for having me. Stay safe, everybody, and I'll look forward to seeing you when we escape from all this at some point.
That's Dan McQuillan from Broadcast Bionics talking to the Radio Today programme, and he mentioned WebRTC a couple of times. That's the backbone of CleanFeed, which is worth trying out if you never have done as of yet. It's great to get a studio quality connection just using a browser for outside broadcasts, interviews with guests, co-hosting shows from remote locations, even presenting your own show from home or making a podcast with a guest, whatever. It's really simple to connect in live quality audio just using your web browser, and you can even record within the browser as well. CleanFeed is free to get going. There is a completely free version. You can sign up for extra features and you'll pay for those, but it only takes 30 seconds to get going and get started with your first broadcast from a remote location. Find out more about it at cleanfeed.net.
Much is said about the talents of Birmingham's Les Ross and his 26 years on Breakfast. But let's remember that BRMB turned him down at first, so his commercial radio debut came at the then Radio Tees this week, 45 years ago.
And a very good morning to you. It's Midsummer Day, Tuesday the 24th of June 1975, and this is Leslie Ross welcoming you to the start of our very first day of transmissions here on Radio Tees 257 metres. Thanks for making the effort. Glad I did. I'll be with you in 5 minutes' time to start our very first breakfast show. Hope you'll risk staying that long anyway.
This was a conscious effort right from the beginning that we wouldn't just have disc jockeys who'd say this is and that was and a few sort of banal jokes, but have presenters who in fact are much broader than that. Yes, they'll play a lot of music, but they're also going to be able to reflect the community in which they're living. I mean, have phone-ins and interviews on a vast range of subjects, some of them quite heavy, involving sort of politics and social issues, and presenters who can cope with that.
Radio Tees, beginning this week in 1975, now known as TFM. Earlier this year, of course, the BBC local station there became BBC Radio Tees. And I think much like BBC Radio Wiltshire, it had a different name at the beginning because the commercial operator had got to the names first. Commercial radio was regulated strictly in its early days, with real intervention on decisions and tight codes for content and technical. And as for trying to make some money, forget it. By this week in 1984, the stations had had enough and convened what became known as the Heathrow Conference.
They were very outspoken, as indeed they were entitled to be, and they felt that not sufficient time had been given to attending to the real requirements of funding for radio, and that the IBA in particular was exercising undue power, and that angered and frustrated them to a very considerable extent.
The regulation of radio in its early 15 years, let's say, up to 1990, was done according to the spirit of the times and with great success in terms of the output. So I'm unashamed about it, but I will hold my hands up to the odd bit of bureaucratic nonsense, maybe more than the odd bit of bureaucratic nonsense.
Tony Stoller, station operator, regulator, trade body executive. And before Tony, you heard from John Whitney, capital MD, and then regulator. At work, listening is fairly important to radio. It accounts for about a quarter of all listening. And the value of our medium in that workplace context has been recognised for a very long time. Music While You Work was the programme which began on the BBC Forces programme this week in 1940, described officially as music meant especially for factory workers to listen to as they work. I have the music policy here, if you'd like it. Here we go. Predominantly familiar pieces. That's good. Nothing lethargic. Consistent volume. Avoidance of overloud drumming. Open brackets, which could sound like gunfire. Close brackets, this was wartime. And generally cheerful programmes to which workers could whistle or sing. So I'd take away the gunfire and you've got the music policy of most radio stations now during the day. The programme was live at first with orchestras and dance bands and military bands, and all the tracks segue neatly together.
Calling all workers. Music While You Work will be played by Troyes and his banjolier.
The sick tune, very familiar, it certainly became so. Calling All Workers, it was called, by Eric Coates. Music While You Work, aimed at wartime workers, later factory workers and motorists as well. First heard on the Forces and Home Service, later on the Light programme. It began 80 years ago this week and continued for 27 years with a couple of comebacks. Tony Blackburn has often been one to speak his mind.
The Peel sort of music, I would never for one moment say that it shouldn't be played on radio. I don't think there's a place for it on Radio 1. I think it should be on Radio 3 in stereo and in VHF, on VHF, because I think people who want that sort of music would rather have it in the quality of sound. I personally don't find anything in it myself. I think people tune into Radio 1 for non-stop hit records.
Tony's speaking about Radio 1 in 1971, but in 2004 this week he was taking issue, so we were told, with the Classic Gold playlist when he was told he couldn't play songs by Cliff.
Well, it struck me as being rather stupid being on a 60s, 70s and 80s station, and Cliff Richard's had over 100 hit records, not to be playing Cliff Richard.
And when it all blew up and became this huge thing with Parliament debating it and stuff, what were you thinking?
Well, I thought it's gone a bit further than I thought it would, to be absolutely honest with you, when they're standing up in Parliament. But at the same time, I got my own way in the end.
He must have been incredibly grateful. Did he send you a note?
Well, he sent me a thank you card and a half a bottle of champagne.
Tony Blackburn in the Sir Cliff Row this week in 2004. Strip shows are now commonplace on radio, so the person you hear at 10 in the morning on a Monday, generally the same person you hear on a Tuesday at 10. Wasn't always the case. Often on BBC radio, presenters used to be on rotors. Ray Moore hosted early breakfast on Radio 2 for 3 month stints. Until this week, 38 years ago, when the programme became his.
I was just thinking, actually, while Bill Withers was singing there, around about this time of a New Year's Eve hogmanay, I remember back in Liverpool, my old dad, around about this time, I'd get his hat and coat on, and he would disappear out into the Stygian gloom of the back entry around about this time of night with a loaf of bread, a fistful of nutty slack, and a brand new Threepenny Joey, which was part of his self-invented tradition of first footing, I suppose. And he'd reappear a couple of hours later, swaying quietly at the front door to himself, having been fortified along the way, of course, with generous helpings of whiskey and assorted other devil's brews. And away in the dark and dim distance, you could just hear Bootle's baby crying.
Step inside.
What a voice. What words. Incredible. So, with Heart rebrands for 2CR, Buzz, Champion, Coast, Essex, Invicta, Marcia, Ocean and Southern 11 years ago.
Heart is coming.
Heart always makes me feel good. Songs that I've liked since I was little.
BBC Radio Leeds, launching 52 years ago.
You're listening to the sound of your own local station, BBC Radio Leeds, 92.4 VHF. It's exactly a quarter to three in time for tea break.
Sandy Toksvig concluding her 9-year stint on the News Quiz on Radio 4 5 years ago.
Ironically, one of the best ways to get a glimpse into what life was like in the 1300s is to spend an evening at a Yeats's wine lodge.
And with the announcement 13 years ago that Heart, LBC and Galaxy, the Chrysalis radio brands, were to be sold for £170 million to form the foundation of a new company called Global Radio, now reaching 23 million people. Those are this week's Radio Moments.
Thank you, David and Roy, and my guest Dan McQuillan this week from Broadcast Bionics. Next time on the Radio Today programme, a focus on Times Radio, the big launch for 2020. By the time you hear us chatting, it will be on the air, and we'll find out how that launch went next week on the Radio Today programme.
The Radio Today programme with Broadcast Bionics.
Original music for this podcast was composed by Mikasa.